Having lived through the dot-com
bubble and the bust, I just think this is more real than people actually even today realize. If you switch on the thinking mode of DeepSeek and you see what is happening, it's eerie. It's unbelievable. We will think of ChatGPT as a clunky MS-DOS equivalent interface. Although, honestly, when I see with deep research what they are doing, and it's hard to call it clunky. But believe me, 2 years from now, we'll say this was clunky. Because you'll be talking to things in an extreme world. This is one of those rare occasions, in my view, where actually it's not hyped enough.
Hi, welcome to the latest edition of Zero to Infinity podcast. Around last month when we decided to record a pod, what we wanted to talk about, the big trigger was agentic AI. And then, boom, DeepSeek happened, followed by deep research, which obviously has put a lot of our analysts at the firm in an existential crisis. And it seems like AI is just keeping up the same pace it had in terms of advances over the last 3-4 years. And it just keeps on going. And what we decided to do was go deeper into some of those topics. The first one for me was, what does all of this mean? Like, is this a fad? Is this real? We have seen advances on AI-led cancer detection just become near-term real. Right? Yeah. Everything seems to be moving so fast, and it's baffling for us as founders and investors. How do you wrap your head around it?
Why do you and I end up in these kind of sectors? Last time we did this was when crypto, I think, was at the bubble, then it burst. Now it's AI. But anyway, great to be on the new podcast, Zero to Infinity. Akash obviously assumes everybody knows him. That's Akash. This is Avnish. And good to be here. I mean, you know, people say live in interesting times. You were probably a kid when the first dot-com bust happened.
Almost a teenager.
Do you remember it?
Yeah. I've lived through the era of everything from GeoCities to dial-up and made even websites back then. So, yes.
Wow. No, so then you have context. So look, I started a company during internet company Bazi during the dot-com bubble, right? We have watched crypto, mobile. This is different. And I don't think it has sunk in. And actually, for a jaded person like me to say that, you know, when you and I continued to question the use cases of crypto,
yep,
even though crypto is making a big comeback, we still question the use cases of crypto. Of course, there may be some in institutional finance, which we have always believed. There is no questioning here. It is a BFD. What has been happening, even the pace at which things have happened, having lived through the dot-com bubble and the bust, I just think this is more real than people actually even today realize. Every day, like you said, deep research, I think DeepSeek was a very big moment. But let me step back and just do a comparison with the dot-com bubble days, because I do think it's instructive. Almost in every bubble, people overestimate what that means in terms of the market opportunity. Therefore, people overinvest in it.
Yeah.
And then it's followed by a bust. But that's very, very good, because essentially that overinvestment helps build infrastructure that becomes commoditized and gets used forever. So almost every bubble, infrastructure type of changes has gone through this cycle, starting way back with the railroads.
The typical hype cycle that we talk about.
So railroads.
Yes.
From railroads to telecom to cable television to internet, crypto to mobile, and now to this. But it is different. The difference is all of those burst because usage never caught up. And monetization comes after usage.
Yes.
Right? Here, usage is exploding. My life has changed. I'm sure your life has changed, right? So monetization is still a question. But I think the overbuild, and let's do some math. What do you think was the peak valuation of Microsoft and Cisco? So the NVIDIA, the NVIDIA of today was the Cisco of the dot-com bubble, was the Qualcomm of the mobile
build-out. I think that time Cisco peaked at what, about 300?
500. And I remember I had a business school case study on Microsoft, which was also 500, which basically said to justify this valuation, some trillions of dollars of revenue. And today, how much is Microsoft? That's what tells you about Harvard Business School, right? So we got it wrong. But what do you think was the internet penetration into the world GDP at that time?
Dot-com era, sub 5%.
Correct. What do you think it is today?
About anywhere between 20 to 25% at a planet scale.
So what multiple is that?
5x.
What multiple is the 500 now at in that? 2.5 to 3 trillion.
Yeah.
What are the largest companies worth? 2.5 to 3 trillion. It all adds up, right? It all adds up, right? So yes, there is an overinvestment bubble, but I have never seen this level of traction. This is real. I have changed my life. If you switch on the thinking mode of DeepSeek and you see what is happening, it's eerie. It's unbelievable. So I think this is all real. The usage is very real. The monetization is behind. There is overinvestment. There will be companies who have navigated this very well. There'll be companies who will not navigate it very well. I am personally of view that Nvidia's valuation will never reach this level again. I'm personally of the view that Microsoft has played it really well because they are open platform. But we'll see. So very exciting. The other thing, Akash, I think last time when we were talking about this, we spoke about how, if you look at the iPhone moment, came in 2006 or 7. When did App Store come?
9.
When did the best apps on the App Store come? When was Snapchat launched?
Nothing before 12.
The same thing is happening. We will think of ChatGPT as the MS-DOS moment. Since you claim that you know all of the previous stuff, you would know what MS-DOS was. We will think of ChatGPT as a clunky MS-DOS equivalent interface. Although, honestly, when I see with deep research what they are doing, and it's hard to call it clunky, but believe me, 2 years from now, we'll say this was clunky because you'll be talking to things. In an extreme world, Neuralink works.
Yeah.
You don't even have to give voice commands. You have to think it and somebody does it. What is different is the moments, the so-called epochal or crucible moments are happening so fast. What people don't realize is even before DeepSeek, even before deep research, Owen was a big deal. Owen was the first one that brought reasoning. What was the technical
reasoning?
Since you are the
chain of thought and reasoning kicked in with Owen.
And why is that a big deal?
Not just that. I think when you're doing that comparison between MS-DOS and that evolution cycle, I think even before MS-DOS there was CPM, so there was one more.
He's trying to act more knowledgeable, but Cash is literally the most knowledgeable on these things, and when I am out of my depth, call him and we brainstorm on stuff. So hopefully we'll get to some of those things in a layman's language here.
And again, from a not just layman's terms, right? I think it boils down to the fact that unlike a lot of those past cycles and advances which happened there, I think of it from a lens of A, this is the fifth or sixth hype cycle of AI. This is not the first hype cycle. B, when you fundamentally think, and which is where some of these things help all of us to assimilate and think of, language models or foundation models are broadly first a correlation engine. That's what they do, right? They are the best next word predictor. You fed it the entire creation of the internet and it just got very good at it. Beyond which, now what we're seeing with advances that are happening after is when you get a great correlation engine, and we keep talking about correlation, causation. I think we're still far from causal AI, but if you keep doing too much correlation, and I'm just trying to make it as layman as possible, if you just keep doing repeated correlation, you do get to a much better answer, right? It's almost like trying to find the best pattern continuously again and again. And which is where everything to do with chain of thought, everything to do with what we are seeing in examples of mixture of experts, all of those things, where you take the output of one foundation model.
By the way, just on this whole point on correlation, one of my smart, wise investor friends said, human brain is not wired for two C's that matter in life, context and compounding. And LLMs have all the context.
Yeah.
They have all the context, not just of your own brain, but they have the context of the world's brain, right? Or at least what's been uploaded on the internet. Compounding is your point on what I think is starting to happen now, which is the chain of thought, which was missing. But just coming back to this point, and at the risk of giving away my age, I did my B.Tech project in IIT Kanpur was on NLP, natural language
processing. At a time when most people would have advised you against it.
My course was called Artificial Intelligence. And there was a language called Prolog.
Yes.
And I built what was in those days called expert systems in Prolog, which is all agentic AI today. So what's changed? Why is it different this time?
I think what changed, and again, that won't be too layman, but from that world, right, when we were talking about neural nets, CNNs and everything, the big pivotal moment happened in 2017.
The transformer thing.
The transformer piece, right.
But what changed? In layman's language, what did it get right?
It just became a better architecture.
Prediction engine.
It just became a better architecture to get to that next word prediction. Like I think broadly, if you had to really zoom out and simplify it like a five-year-old, it would be, you simply said, what does a human brain do? Instead of trying to replicate what we had been doing over decades, our neural nets, right? And that is what was the holy grail of what we were trying to achieve. People just said that, okay, how do you learn? You learn by looking at information.
Yeah.
And if you can look at all the information and just be the best at pattern matching,
yeah,
it's almost going to get you to the 80% answer.
Yeah.
Right. And which is why it was easiest first to do with as language models. Right. So even if you go back to when GPT 2 or 3 came out, they were just good language models. Then we were able to add context to it.
Yeah.
The first GPT 1 could not, you know, it had a point in time before, yeah, post which it would say, oh, I have no knowledge beyond that, right?
Yeah.
Because they couldn't factor in a lot of context. They couldn't factor in a lot of live context,
yeah,
right? Today, they are able to run wild and do whatever. Like they can go and scrape the internet for you.
Yeah.
They can go and find the most latest assimilation of whatever data you provided.
Yeah.
Right? So it's just an evolution of that. And post that fundamental moment, what has actually happened? This is where, you know, there's a huge debate, was DeepSeek made in such less amount or not?
No chance.
No chance.
But can DeepSeek be run very cheaply? Yes.
Yes.
Right? So that's the BFD.
And that's the big FD because of the fact that when you think of ROI,
yeah,
right, this seems like the pure deflationary nature of technology. Your output and input costs,
yeah,
are so interrelated in a way where if I can keep doing this, if,
yeah,
I can keep just taking an input from an LM, give it to another, and just keep doing that, and if I can do it very cheap, my output quality just keeps improving.
Yeah, and that's why if I again connect back to the dot-com bubble, when I started Bazi, I had to raise $15-20 million. You had to buy Sun Java servers, like things you haven't, you don't even think of today.
Yeah.
There was no concept of cloud.
I don't think any founder today knows that you had to set up your own racks.
Yes. I mean, and I was sitting in VSNL trying to connect the wires myself, which was a disaster. But anyway, so commoditizing within the following 3-4 years, the cost of starting an internet company dropped by 90-95%. We were talking earlier about what were the big moments in AI, right? Clearly, ChatGPT is clear. Of course, Sam Altman is quoted today saying deep research is the next big moment. DeepSeek obviously is a big moment. I think what people missed, I think Owen was a big moment. The other thing people miss is if you look at the cost per token of compute, between April and September 24, it dropped by 90%.
Exactly, I'm saying that was what I was about to get to, that you were talking 90-95%, we're already there.
Yeah, and now it's again dropped.
And it's continuing to drop.
So this is becoming free. And so it's awesome because the entrepreneurship is going to explode and should explode because now you can again start a company with $1-3 million as opposed to the narrative that was forming, which would again, all money would go to the hyperscalers.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, the bigger are going to get bigger.
This dynamic interplay of cost and the output getting better, which brings us back to what was the original trigger for this podcast, which was agentic. I think over there, this just multifold changes what happens. We saw recently Replit announce an agent which can create apps for you while you're on your phone, right? We have gone from an era of 2009 when Apple said there is an app for that to now saying make an app for that. Deep research is such a big one. where now again, because it is an agentic framework, the output you get, our analysts are fretting whether they will have a job tomorrow or not.
Yeah.
What does all of this mean for knowledge workers? What does all of this mean for coders, right? And with coding, we've already seen, like, the fastest company to ever get to 100 million is Cursor, right?
Yeah.
And it's not a hockey stick, it's like a pole. It just went up.
Yeah.
And AI within the context of software development has been making leaps far faster than anywhere else. Seems like two of the largest.
What's your thesis? I mean, I'll give you some context because my son has done research papers on this, but what do you think? Specifically on impact on knowledge workers.
I do think that experts get insane leverage because now whatever was like a grunt work, you can spend lesser time on that. You can spend it on more other things. I think same way even in coding, your best architects who could always anyway do things on their own, but you should rely on piecing a lot of pieces together with a large team, they get leverage.
Like, yeah.
But that's where the question is flipped. It's a question about the rest.
So by the way, just on this, since we were talking a lot about the global companies, first we have to also give a shout out to our own companies that are really doing cutting edge stuff here, right? So Krutrim, Bhavish announced so many models yesterday. Then we of course have NASA, which is providing the infrastructure, Atomic Work. So I would like a lot more founders, hopefully coming out of this discussion, to be excited about this, because this is very exciting. Knowledge workers cash, I don't know the answer. My son's thesis also, he didn't reach an answer. But let's look back at the little bit more macro gyan, at the history of civilization. Starting from the invention of the wheel, to the industrial age, to, you know, telephony, to everything. Every time this question comes, no? That jobs will be lost. But what happens? Jobs are not lost. Jobs, different jobs happen. And mankind adapts very fast. You know, what are the Adam Smith's three factors of production? Is it three or four? Is it four? Land, labor, capital, and?
What's the fourth one? So those are the three we all.
I think there should be a fourth. There'll be AI. I think of it as a factor of production. And there's a term called TFP, total factor productivity, which drives economies. One of the things that shocks people is how the US continues to grow at its scale and it keeps beating GDP forecasts. And way back again, 20 years ago, or maybe 30 years ago, the Fed chairman at that time introduced this concept. His name was Alan Greenspan. He introduced this concept of TFP. And he's like, basically, technology is making us more and more productive.
Yep.
Okay. I think this AI will put it on steroids. I think what will happen, my view, is we'll produce more and we'll consume more. And if we produce more and we consume more, people will find jobs. And maybe their lives are better. Or maybe everybody becomes a Elon Musk and does five things at the same time, or a Bhavish Agarwal and is able to do five things at the same time, right?
Let's hope not. So that there is some alpha for all of us. But on that note of future of work, clearly a big play that many of our portfolio companies like Atomic Works, AMP are already playing to has been system of agents. And at the core of what they're building is basically saying that till date, software used to enable people to do their job better.
Yeah.
Now can software do the job better?
Yeah.
That's broadly.
Dude, this is such a BFD. And if you step back and you think about India and what happened, right? We pioneered outsourcing. Infosys went public, late 80s, 90s, TCS, it created an industry, which was part envy, part whatever for the world, right? But people would say that this is body shopping, this is outsourcing, where is the value addition, this, that. I actually think India missed a wave in the middle. I know we had great companies like Freshworks and Zoho come out of the software as a service era. But now it's called servitization of software, right? So it is service as software, not software as service. I think it's a massive opportunity for India. And we missed that whole middle way, but let's take Atomic Work. What are they trying to do? Essentially, if you look at most SaaS companies, who uses the software?
Some workforce, someone in the workforce.
Some agent, right? Now, take ServiceNow, take Salesforce. Let's say you have a better Salesforce type of company and you are going and trying to sell to an enterprise that's using Salesforce. What is your barrier to entry?
The fact that there are so many people there who are doing this job.
They're not going to buy your software because they're going to say, I have 10,000, 5,000, 2,000 people that I will need to retrain. And that's your barrier to entry. And what is Atomic Work doing? It's saying, I'm going to fix the problem. I'm going to fix what the agent does with the software. So you don't need the agent. It's very, very big deal. It's a very, very big deal. It provides Indian companies, particularly, I'm very excited that they can. And the reason AMP, Atomic Work, they are raising money from the best VCs in the world is because they are now competing on a global level.
Yes.
Right? And it is so exciting. Almost everything should get replaced. But I had a reality check when I tried a project with you guys. So maybe you should. So the project was called The Rational Investor. In my utopian view of the world, there would be a bot or an agent that would attend our investment team meetings and be a voting member of the meetings and look at all the context, our strategy, our playbook, our portfolio or anti-portfolio and give a very reasoned, thoughtful vote. But you told me it can't be done.
See, that is also, now you never know, partly it might be we are just protecting our jobs.
Yeah.
But no, so I think...
Oh, I didn't think of that.
It is, again, it's I wouldn't be surprised that if it is maybe...
But why is this, like, it sounds to me that this should be so easy to do. Why not? What is the issue?
It's not a trivial problem, but it is not an impossible problem. And I think that's where we also got to the answer, which was that maybe a 6 to 9 month timeline, a lot more building blocks, which should allow us to get to that answer, would be there. And I think it might even happen earlier, right? Probably today, it is slightly at a distance that we can get this.
But even deep research is an interesting product for all our thesis.
And which is what we are now trying to adopt pretty extensively.
Yeah.
Just on this agentic piece, services and software piece, how should founders and investors think of markets, right? Because intuitively, it seems like if you're when you are selling software, you are playing to the IT spend, which is what, maybe 5%, upper end 15% of revenue. But now you are playing to much larger pools, right?
So 10x supposedly. I read somewhere like service TAM is 10x the software TAM. I think it needs a little bit of reimagination of what are you trying to do. And I don't think the conversation is actually even in servitization of software. Actually, maybe in some places it is. Then I would not even start with what we were discussing before, which is there are agents, they are using this software. Let me replace these agents with software, right? I would actually start at this is the business's objective. Almost stop there and say, where does it need people and why? Right, and then all the job security questions would come. And we will come to that in some context as we discuss further. But I think that's where it would just explode the TAM. Now, you have tried to keep me, I guess, grounded that the technology is not there yet, right?
Not fully there yet.
Yeah. And by the way, this is what might happen in the context of even jobs where generally, people are saying you can get to 90% accuracy, you can get to this. So the humans will be required, right? But Sam Altman was quoted today saying, supposedly, and again, how fast these things move. Yesterday, supposedly, there's a Lancet study which talks about breast cancer detection improving by 30%.
Yes.
With AI, right? It's a little bit of a digression, but when you think about agents, I would actually start by saying, what can they not do rather than what can they do? And that's the, if you flip that and you think like that, the TAM is infinite.
Yeah, that is what I was going to say, that if agents, like your worldview of, you know, what does a business want to achieve? Can you just take that down? Then we're not talking 10x, then we're talking probably 100x TAM.
Yeah.
And that's a lucrative opportunity for almost every founder.
Yeah. No, and but Cash, the important thing to realize, having lived through so many hype cycles in many different verticals, right? Crypto we discussed, mobile we discussed, internet we discussed. I really want people to realize that this is real. And the proof of the pudding, you would be surprised. I was with a founder. And even sometimes we discuss internally, there's still people who don't use ChatGPT as default.
And which is what I was coming to. We are talking about the opportunity and the size of the prize and all of this somewhere. And we have had this chat with a lot of our founders. We keep talking about it. The why now and the urgency of adopting it by existing companies doesn't seem to be there.
Yeah.
Why is that the case? What? How should founders think of it
differently? Inertia, I guess. Inertia. Shockingly, the view that this is hype, right? This is one of those rare occasions, in my view, where actually it's not hyped enough. Like when you listen to the Sam Altmans of the world, and maybe you should explain what AGI is, but we are moving rapidly towards AGI.
No, and I can take a shot at explaining it with a contextual example, which would be...
So what does AGI stand for?
Artificial intelligence. But what does it mean? A lot of people debate what's the definition of AGI.
Yeah.
It's basically when a machine can do an economic activity at par or better than a human could do, right? I think we're already there in some ways, right? Like when you...
In certain things, I don't know what the right definition is, but I think AGI would mean super intelligence, let's say, whatever, which would be in all activities.
That is the extreme definition of AGI.
And maybe better than humans.
Yes.
Right?
So. But there are certain pieces where AI does do it better and has been doing better forever.
Yeah,
one example I use a lot with founders is, what as per you is the biggest AI company today?
As per me?
Yeah.
I'm going to give the traditional answer. So you tell me, I'll say OpenAI or Microsoft.
So the biggest AI company today in the world is Meta. The biggest AI company in the world is ByteDance.
Yeah.
They have been...
ByteDance, I agree.
Right?
And they have been for a while.
They have been for a while.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And an example of AI or a software doing job better than a human is, you remember Bazi, right? Or even you think of people, a lot of folks who built first version of e-com. You would do the merchandising. You would decide what's your homepage, what goes where, right?
Is that brain dead work? It should be somebody else.
No, and is any human doing it and deciding what's your X feed? No.
Yeah.
Is any human deciding what's your Instagram feed? No.
Yeah.
It is not some team sitting and saying, oh, let us do 1,000 segments. Let's show this to this person. Only an AI can do that.
Theoretically though, I know we are going off script on this. You know, just again, for people's benefit, there's machine learning and there's deep learning. Machine learning is, you know, all the algorithms, pattern matching, data, whatever. Deep learning is essentially replicating your brain and therefore more of the...
It has emergent behavior.
Yeah, yeah. And predictive and all of that. ByteDance's biggest edge, does that go away with commoditization of AI? Can a new TikTok be created much faster?
I would say yes. So the edge doesn't go away.
Huh.
What happens is now, earlier... All of the resources to work on AI could only be deployed by these large companies. So if you think of a yield curve or on ROI for AI development, it was so skewed towards Meta, ByteDance, Google, ads and commerce, right? Others just couldn't do it. You wouldn't get the right bang for the buck by investing behind it, right? So these companies for the last decade, they could assimilate largest armies of the best deep learning experts. They could deploy GPUs even before people started getting into a frenzy.
But that's all becoming commodity now.
That is becoming commoditized.
Yeah.
Right? And which is where I think...
No, but then, and maybe we'll converge on this then, the moat then is data. Data and how you use the data.
The moat then is data, how do you use the data, and actually how do you get your data ready to be used? I think that's the big
but
one.
But can't AI even tell us that at some point? Anyway, that's
potentially
it's a theoretical point.
Potentially, yes. Going back to the question of what should founders do, existing companies, because, you know, inertia or whatever you call it, you could risk pretty much happening what happened in the cloud.
I think read and learn and learn. And it, today, you know, there are different times in my life where I've had FOMO of not being a founder. This is one of those. Don't tell the investors, hopefully they are not listening to this. I had it in 2018 when I could see the digitization of Indian economy take off, see what happened in the last 5-6 years, look at the market cap creation. I have it now because I would start an AI company. I mean, every company has to be an AI company. Like, how can you not, right? And I just think we will do our best to educate the founders and almost wake them up. ChatGPT can teach you. It's not very complex. Just ask it, right? The people are just not using the tools out there, right? We are trying to do with our rational investor project, we ran into roadblocks. And at least reach a place where you run into roadblocks. No,
and I think maybe it was Gokul or someone who put it out that, or Dharmesh at HubSpot, right? One of them put it out that now for hiring, one of the key questions they ask is, how are you keeping yourself up to pace with advances in AI? What tools are you tinkering with? How deep are you going? And they're saying this is now the most important question in when they are hiring.
Dude, my son taught me that in ChatGPT, you put dash dash and you say refine prompt. So prompt engineering, by the way, started about a year and a half, 2 years ago when ChatGPT came out. It became a vocational discipline. Then ChatGPT solved that.
Yes.
But how many people know that you don't need to prompt? ChatGPT will give you the prompt. Just put a voice note and say, create a prompt for me.
Give me the best possible prompt.
Yeah. And which has been, so anyway, I just think people should use it. To me, usage will spark ideas. Yes. People should just start using it. You know, all of us love traveling. We are not very far away from a day. My view is months. Now we'll come to what are the opportunities. If you look at, there are two or three seminal podcasts which I think explain things very well. And two of them are Sam Altman on 20VC and Sam Altman on All In. And it's very, very user-friendly language. And he basically said, what won finally? Once you have commodities, what wins finally? UX.
UX.
It's back to the same thing. People should be excited. They should be excited about using AI to build great products, which we all want to use, right? We are not very far away from the day where you will just put a voice command and say, I want to go to this country. And please go research the best itinerary using experts like Condé Nast Traveler, this, that, and the friends with whom I share similar interests, which also the AI would know. So there are some privacy issues. I would open it all up because it would make my life so much easier. And then get me the best deals. And then go book it. Nowadays, what I do with ChatGPT, I get it to refine the prompts and I say, execute. You will just say, execute.
So on that one, Avi, in the past have built in consumer tech, consumer internet. You're talking about this travel, all of this. The last shift when it happened to mobile, right? And cloud and mobile almost back to back. It spawned some of the largest consumer tech companies, right? Netflix came out of that. Airbnb came out of that. Do you think, and almost for a decade now, consumer tech has been on a low globally, right? Both from foundership and investing. Do you think there's going to be a resurgence?
For sure, but I share your wariness that the big guys are not stupid. The last time around, many of them got wrong-footed and mobile first became a big wedge, right? I think this time they get it more.
Yeah.
The sad thing is, I think the big guys are ahead.
Ahead, far ahead.
Of the founders. They get it much more. Right? That's my wariness. And I therefore urge everybody to just start using it and reimagining. But it is a big moment. 3-4 years from now, you will be using products AI first. Question is, new company
or the existing ones? And with that as the backdrop, we spoke about services and software, big getting better, just zeroing in, homing in on India, right? As a founder, how should I put all of this into context and think of India native opportunity?
Both India native, but also global, right? I think, see, the good news is we have many investments now. The good news is you now have founders who have tasted blood with. So I still think you'll have the standard mix. There'll be the first time founders like Bhavesh and Adit of Zepto and all will come and disrupt something. And you'll have the experienced guys. But the market is global. Today's paper says Zepto is the second largest downloaded app in global food and beverage category, right? Our markets are now global, right? And we have scale. Sam Altman has changed his tune and said India will, you know, be great and it's 3x usage year over year, whatever. So I just think big. But there is a sovereign angle to this. There is a national security angle to it. So everybody is going to create walls and barriers, and for the right reasons. This is war, right? You forwarded, I think, a tweet that don't get it wrong, that there is an AI war.
The Palantir earnings call.
Yeah. And China has fired a massive missile or whatever, right, with that. So I think it'll be a good war. Well, there'll be obviously bad actors and everybody will try sabotage and all those things. But it's a good war in the sense that it'll keep you on the edge. DeepSeek has pushed OpenAI to do better.
And they acknowledge it.
And look at the costs and how they are dropping and everything, right? So I just think, I keep going back to founders, please start using this stuff. It is very big. It will change your thinking. It will open up new markets. And the opportunities are everywhere. I'm actually a big believer, and you know, we have an internal bet running that you'll have a humanoid. I'm a believer in humanoids. I'm a believer not just in robots, but I'm a believer in humanoids. And I was reading one report where if you look at healthcare in the US, you know, the one thing which I don't have yet clear on, what differentiates human beings from animals?
Just more elaborate pattern matching.
So you are saying intelligence. If it's intelligence, then that AI can have. Of course, clearly you are unemotional, but I would say emotion also at times. So now let's take nursing as an example in the US, right? Imagine, you don't even need to imagine. There'll be humanoids who will be nurses. What does that do? Is nursing about, it's called care.
Yes.
Care is emotion, right? So I think what will happen is some of the brain dead stuff, I know it sounds a little bit harsh, but will get to humanoids. And then you'll have the care. Right. So I can see if all you have to do as the job of the nurse where they have to give an injection, maybe will still be care because it's a human connection. But coming and looking at the monitors and the readings and doing it 5 times a night, it'll move to humanoids.
No, and it's going to be flawless.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It'll be extremely data driven where actually human error happens. Right. So I just think it's just massive. It's a massive opportunity. I think we've always said India has great talent. Our IP, our brain power, I just hope and I wish and I encourage founders to apply it to AI.
On that note, we remain as ambitious and as excited as our founders are about this big opportunity.
You should actually maybe spend a minute talking about DVC and how we lean into frontier sectors from DVC.
And I think Abhi's talking about, from our pre-seed vehicle, which is DVC, I think today we have about, 20 odd companies which are going after multiple of these large prizes, be it across vertical AI for healthcare or even consumer applications like AI in education. And we remain excited about all these opportunities. And as I said, we are as excited as our founders. And if you're building anything in this domain, please feel free to reach out to us. And thank you, Abhi. Thank you for doing this. And I hope we can shake up our ecosystem a bit more, get us slightly to parity with the Bay. Because right now it seems like we're slightly far away.
We are way behind. And it is surprising to me. But yeah.
Super. Thank you.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for doing this.
If you like this episode of Zero to Infinity, there are so many more that you must check out. If you like Indian startup content, hearing about founder journeys, or knowing more about emerging sectors that we're investing in, Zero to Infinity is the channel that you need to subscribe to.